Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcast. This is Podcast 368, kind of a free-form update podcast for you in this podcast. So we had a great week of warm weather. Was it a week? Maybe it was 2 weeks. I don't remember. It was wonderful sitting out on the deck in the warm sunshine. And now the trees are full. You know, we got lots of leaves, but it still is not warm yet, but it's going to come, you know. I actually have been predicting a very hot summer, and so you're going to want to get your air conditioning checked, and this is why I bring up Ryan Plumbing and Heating on University Avenue in St. Paul, just west of the state capitol, where they've always been. So here's the deal. Ryan Plumbing and Heating will come out and check your AC. Lots of times, in order for it to work right, they got to wash the coils on the outside unit. They need to check the filters. So for your home or business, it's no time to wait until it's 90 degrees to check the AC. The other thing that people recommend Ryan Plumbing and Heating for is emergency service. So if you need emergency service, Ryan Plumbing and Heating is great at that. They get a lot of calls for emergency service. So to get your AC checked and also emergency service in St. Paul, 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Again, it may have worked fine last summer, but you don't know if it's going to work great this year, so you want to make sure. When you want reliable service, that means Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul. You call 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. And one more thing. A lot of people these days are taking advantage of low interest rates either to buy houses or to put additions on their houses, bathrooms and such. And Ryan Plumbing is great for that. So if you have just bought a new house, want to get everything checked out, or if you know that there's going to be some work that needs to be done, don't forget Ryan Plumbing and Heating. They go to the suburbs, so you can call 612-927-6488 on the Minneapolis side of the river. On the St. Paul side, 651-224-4771. Once again, for four generations, quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, residential and business, Ryan Plumbing and Heating. So we're going to start with one of my favorite stories. One of the stories I think is the coolest story that I have seen all week. And it doesn't have anything to do with Jeb Bush, and it doesn't have anything to do with Hillary Clinton, and it doesn't have anything to do with the economy or anything else. This is the story about an asteroid that is a mile wide that is supposed to run past Earth in about 48 hours from the time that I'm recording this, which will be on May 14th. This thing is called Asteroid 1999 FN53. It is, they're not quite sure how big it is, but they think it's about a mile across. And the headlines are all, it'll brush closer than previous monsters, which have sparked, quote, a global panic, unquote, which I think is ridiculous because you go through this story, and this is in the London Daily Express, which is a, you know, it's a website, and there's many, many, many pages of pictures of, you know, what will happen with destruction and how this thing would kill us all and the terrible things that will happen. And I keep, as I'm reading through the story, I keep asking myself and asking the story, well, how far is it going to skim the Earth? You know, how far away is it going to skim the Earth in, quote, unquote, 2 days? It's all about how big it is, and it's all about what would happen if it hit, and so forth and so on. And, you know, it's frustrating because I realize when I get to the bottom of the story, I realize that there's a reason why they didn't put how far away it will, quote, unquote, skim the Earth, because it's going to be something like, let's just say 3 or 4 million miles from the planet, which in space terms is close. But on the other hand, I just want to point out that the moon, and I don't have the exact distance of the moon to the Earth. I think it is 283,000 miles, but I could be wrong. I think, let's just say it's 250,000 miles away. So the moon is 250,000 miles away from the Earth only, you know, and the Earth, of course, keep in mind, is something like 27,000 miles at its widest point around, right? So the moon is really close to the planet Earth, and it skims the surface of the planet Earth, quote unquote, all the time. So, and we don't think anything of it. We wait expectantly for the moon to rise. We love full moons. We love eclipses and all those sorts of things. The moon is the closest, you know, object in the solar system, quote unquote. I'm not a cosmologist. So if I use the wrong terms, then I use the wrong terms. But you know, the moon is the closest thing to the planet Earth. And when they tell us that this giant asteroid is going to pass by the planet Earth, well, I think, well, it's going to skim right by. I mean, it's going to come between the moon and the planet Earth. No, it's going to be 4 million miles away. But it does bring up, and this is why it's my favorite story, because it's one of my favorite scenarios, because it is one of those things that will eventually happen. I mean, it has happened before. Actually, things hit the planet Earth all the time. It's just that nothing big has hit the planet Earth. I think a lot of times when people see things like UFOs and things like that, they are probably seeing these kinds of events. Meteor showers are nothing more than things like this hitting the Earth. So, you know, there's nothing new about that. But, and of course, in the early ages of Earth, these things hit the planet a lot more. So, you know, we certainly have evidence that these things have hit the Earth several times. And I suppose the most recent really large meteor strike was the one that struck, I think, around the turn of the 20th century in Russia, that would have hit with the power of the Hiroshima blast. And it would have been something that that would have been, you know, done massive damage. It did do massive damage in the forest. The Tunguska event in 1908, which saw a 50-meter lump of extraterrestrial rock smash into Siberia. This thing is miles across. It's not going to hit the Earth, but it's interesting because it brings up this question of what would we do and what would happen and what would the effect be? Well, the effect of this large an object hitting the Earth would be really catastrophic. It would be something that many people would perish immediately, and many people would perish in the hours afterward, and many people would perish in the months afterward. But I think the thing that's absolutely fascinating to me is the idea that without warning, at any time, and by the way, NASA and all of the space agencies on the planet, you know, don't have every single one of these objects cataloged, so they don't know. I mean, it's always possible that something could cruise in and hit the planet that no one was prepared for. And I think if something like this ever happens, as long as we're on the planet, we probably won't know that it's coming. And I'm not sure that they would even warn us if it was coming, because there's really little that anyone could do about it. Certain governments might get ready. That might explain why the conspiracy theorists are talking about all of these quote-unquote operations going on all over the United States. What is it? Operation Jade Helm, where they have special forces in the American West. Who knows? You know, maybe all these things are preparations for something that they wouldn't tell us. And I ask this question to myself all the time. I mean, if something was really, you know, a terminal existential threat to the world, do you think that they would tell us? And the answer that I come up with every time is absolutely not, you know, because it would cause pandemonium if they said, we know something's coming, we know it's going to hit us, it's going to be devastating, so go out and get yourself some canned food and be prepared. No, they wouldn't tell anyone because people would go crazy. And we've certainly seen some craziness in the last few months, and it makes you wonder, maybe people know something that we don't. Somebody said to me tonight, boy, people have been weird lately. Like, I've noticed people are super intense lately. They just seem to be in a big hurry, and they're super intense. And, you know, of course, animals seem to know when there's going to be an earthquake. You know, the animals certainly know that. And, you know, the scientific explanation for that is that they're very tuned in to the ground and the planet, and they don't automatically filter out noises and feelings and things like that. And just like seismic systems can detect the possibility of an earthquake, the conditions are right for an earthquake, so can animals. Well, we're animals, and it's hard to tell what we think that we're able to predict or what we think would happen or will happen is almost impossible to describe. You know, I've heard a lot of people talk about psychic ability. And the problem with psychic ability is, you know, you might see things or feel things or hear things or dream things or be shown things And it you have to then figure out how to interpret that based on how your mind and your template interpreted it first. So you have to decode the message because the message came to you, let's say, unexpectedly, and it came to you in a dream, or you heard a noise or something, or you felt something. You have to decode it internally before you can say, this is what I think this means. And that's all that psychics do. If they have a gift and they receive information, then they have to decode it and try to figure out what it means. And it's not easy to do that. So it's interesting to me that this is coming up now. The other thing that's interesting about an asteroid is no warning and massive destruction. So, you know, suddenly you're in this this Mad Max kind of situation, or a Walking Dead situation that you had no preparation for. And it's always fun to play that game mentally. And this is one of the reasons I thought that The Walking Dead was such a great show in the early stages of it. And there's another show. And, you know, my friend really loves this show. My friend Andy loves this show, Jericho, where it's the same kind of thing, although, unfortunately, the show, they screwed up the show because they explained what happened. The thing is, that's what makes The Walking Dead great, is you still don't know what happened. And so you keep watching because you hope that at some point they will figure that out. So these are the thoughts that occur to me when I hear about this asteroid. You know, I'm not worried about this one because they've seen this one. They know it's coming. You know, what's it going to do? It's going to pass the Earth within 4 million miles, and it's not going to have any effect. It's the ones that you don't see coming that will cause the damage. And you never know. Something like this can happen anytime. And it makes me think, and I'm not quite sure how to say this, but I love thinking about this because I think it's so useful. You know, we all know people who live their lives in these very tight organizational boxes where everything is planned. And sometimes I look at people like that and I think, God, I wish I could be like that because, you know, they've got everything organized and there are no, you know, they've got the key things organized and they're ready for almost anything and they've got plenty of money and they've got everything under control. And I actually envy people who are organized in that way because being more of an artist type person, I am not organized in that fashion. I work at another level, and so the kind of rule that I've always followed in my life is the rule of dynamic reversal. Now, if you work at the post office, the rule of dynamic reversal doesn't necessarily apply, but in the entertainment business, you know, I know people like this. We and many of us in the entertainment business know people like this that, you know, one minute they have nothing and the next minute they've got a show and they are multimillionaires. And it does happen that way. Or one minute they have nothing and the next minute they write a book and it's a bestseller and it's like winning the lottery. Next thing you know, they have three books or four books and they've got lots and lots of money because they got that break. And even small breaks produce dynamic results in the entertainment business. So most of us who are artistic or in the entertainment business, you know, we don't worry too much about that kind of stuff because of the law of dynamic reversal. And it's always been a constant in my life. You know, my problem is that I have bad luck and then I have good luck and I have so much good luck that it's almost too much to take. Like, I don't know what to do. Which offer do you take first or which thing do you do first when you have that run of good luck that happens? And maybe that's a gambler's philosophy. I'm not a gambler, but I do believe in the rule of dynamic reversal. But the cool thing about this rule is, the other thing is, one thing that you learn is that you can't predict the future. We spend so much time in this country trying to predict the future, and trying to plan for the future, and trying to say what the stock market's going to do this month, or whether or not we're going to have a war in such and such a place, and what needs to be done to deal with that. And you know, if we don't do this, this is going to happen, and if we don't do that, that's going to happen, and so forth. So what's interesting about the asteroid thing is it's completely unpredictable. Now, they're trying to catalog every single near-Earth object. They call them NEOs so that they know what's out there and what's on an elliptical path headed toward the solar system and so forth. But they don't know. And they'll tell you that they haven't cataloged every single one of them, and they couldn't possibly do that. So at some point, something is going to hit the planet. without warning, and it will do varying degrees of damage. This thing is a mile or so wide, and if it hit the planet, it would destroy the atmosphere. So it would set off fires. It would just be a huge catastrophic disaster. And I'm sure if it hit in someplace like Yellowstone, it would ignite the whole Yellowstone caldera, and things could happen. And of course, if you've listened to shows like Coast to Coast for any length of time in your life, you know that if the Yellowstone caldera blew, the one it's at the one at the Yellowstone Park out there in Wyoming. If that thing blew, it would create a nuclear winter, literally, all over the upper Midwest and the East Coast, and cause all kinds of problems. I mean, if there was an earthquake in the California coast, it would be a massive disaster. We saw what a small earthquake did in San Francisco not too many years ago in terms of the rest of the country, or a hurricane in New Orleans. So these things can happen, and it just reminds me that we have to be prepared to adapt. And we have to be prepared to deal with things that come up that aren't predictable. And in the last 10 years, in particular, ever since 9/11, we've really put a lot of stock in predicting every single event, outlier or not, that will ever happen, and therefore be prepared for it. And you just can't be. And it's a lesson for life, because the reality is life can change in the blink of an eye. And you're always surprised. You never know what the change will bring. I grew up with a lot of that type of thing going on. I think most of us probably have. If we don't think about it, we probably don't realize that almost all of us grew up with situations where that were completely unpredictable. I'm reminded of my friend Kelly down in Texas, who, when she was growing up, her mother, and we've all had, I'm telling a story about Kelly because I don't want to tell mine. But I know I have my stories too, but she told a great story about how, her mother was, I'm not sure if she was married to this man or if they were married, or if they were just living together, but they lived in a trailer. And I remember Kelly was I haven't talked to her in a long time, an amazing salesperson. And we used to talk about growing up, and she always said, well, basically, I grew up poor, and I don't want to be poor anymore. And that's one of the things that motivates me. And then she started to tell me about this trailer thing. And she talked about the day that the man in her life, her mother's life, simply died. I mean, he died unexpectedly, and they were completely unprepared for it. And they came back from the hospital, and it was winter, and the cat had somehow gotten out of the trailer, and I guess they left the door open when they went to the hospital, and the cat was frozen on the steps of the trailer. So, think about her life. It was going along at a certain pace, and things were at a certain, stasis, let's say, and this terrible event happened. And, she remembers that as a turning point, So, your life can change in a blink of an eye, and there's no warning. And in some ways, that's one of the good things about life, but it's also one of the challenging things about life. I bring up the asteroid because another story which really got to me today, and this one isn't about Jeb Bush, and it isn't about American politics, and it isn't about any of that stuff. This one has to do with how people identify with a faith. And this one, the headline is "Big Drop in Share of Americans Calling Themselves Christian." And this one is another one that I have a lot of passion for. Very interesting to me that Christians, the share of adults who are Christians in the United States, according to Pew, has declined sharply since 2007. I don't know if they take this survey every year or if they take it every 7 years or something, but it has declined something like 8 percentage points to a similar Pew survey in 2007. This is a Christian share of the population. Has been declining for decades. Now it's down to something like 70%. And I've got three or four different stories here, and one of them had the percentage right at the top of the story. This one doesn't. And here it is. Yeah, it's declined from 78% in 2007 to 70.6% now. So I do remember this, and I don't know that I don't know if it was Pew or other pollsters. I do remember that right after 9/11, the churches were full. I do remember that right after 9/11, people were much more likely to identify with some kind of Christian faith. So if they say it's been dropping, you know, the old saying that there are no atheists in foxholes might come into play. The other thing is that it's the mainline faiths, the mainline Protestant faiths, and Catholicism, which is struggling the most in the United States. Now, my understanding is that Catholicism is on the rise in Latin America and Africa and other parts of the world. It is declining in Europe, which has really been, the churches in Europe are deserted most of the time. When we were in France, we went to, was it France or Italy? I guess it was France, because I went with a family, and my father-in-law goes to church every Sunday without fail. He was raised Catholic, and, you know, I mean, he just goes to church no matter what. And we went to a church in France, and it was, you know, there weren't as many people there as you would have thought, although it was surprising there were a lot of people there. I think a lot of them were tourists. But, you know, the joke is that in Europe, the churches are museums. You know, that's where all the museums are, the churches and stuff. So I don't even know what the numbers in Europe are, but I know that in the United States, that supposedly the Catholic and the mainline Protestant faiths are suffering. So I was raised Protestant, Presbyterian, actually, and, you know, married Catholic and agreed to raise my son Catholic. And I guess I'm glad that I raised my son Catholic, and I went to church, took him to church dutifully, you know, but I find it difficult to get behind the, to a certain degree I have described as hokum when it comes to stuff going on in church. And a lot of people who are really religious aren't going to like hearing that, but, you know, it's just the way I feel, and I wouldn't even set foot in a Presbyterian church because of the political orientation of the church. And these stories go on and on and on about the different issues going on with church and, you know, their positions on things. But I think this speaks, especially for young people, I think this speaks to the fact that the institutions that we have come to know and love in the United States over the last 60 to 100 years really are losing their influence. And I think a lot of it has to do with disruptive technology, you know, in lots of things. I think there's, you know, I think there's disruptive technology, disruptive media, but I think life is disruptive these days. People move around a lot. They live alone. They get divorced. And so it's got to be hard for the churches to attract people to believe and to listen. It takes an event, you know, it takes an event that scares people to bring them. People, fear brings people into church, to be quite honest with you, and that is fear of dying. Fear of that unexpected event is what drives people to seek the solace of religion or the connection with God. I mean, I think that's part of it. I think left to their own devices, I think people pretty much go and do what they want to do. The other thing is, I think it's weird in some ways that that the whole church thing has to take place on Sunday, and I never did like the fact that you have to get dressed up, and then you got to go sit there, and you have to listen to somebody tell you what the scriptures say, where, you know, you've got the book and you can read the book, and I don't understand why, you know, people require someone to tell them what it means when you can sort of figure it out on your own if you do your own studies. Maybe I'm just too independent, but I don't believe this. And you know, it's funny because after that whole speech about how I think a lot of it's hokum, especially with Christian evangelicals, it's very interesting to me how, you know, the whole thing with the evangelicals is it's based on predicting, you know, the end of the world and predicting something that isn't in the Bible, which is the rapture, and that there are going to be people who are going to be taken up and taken up with the Lord, and the rest of us poor souls who are not part of the little club are going to be left here on the planet. And the reason I brought that up is I got to mention this because I watched everything there is to watch on Netflix. And you know that when you're down to the Hong Kong kung fu movies, which actually are really good, or the Taiwanese crime movies, which are tremendous movies, except that they're obviously subtitled movies, or the Russian crime movies, you know when you're down to that and you watch Nicolas Cage in Left Behind, which is, it's so bad, it's good. I encourage everyone to watch it. But the thing I love about that movie is this idea that, you know, the bereft are left because they weren't taken up with the people who were sucked up into heaven at the rapture event. It's not in the Bible. It's an interpretation from the book of Revelations, which came much later. It's not in the Bible. And I don't bring it up to pillory Christians or to pillory evangelicals. I bring it up because the thing that I find fascinating is here is another thing that's based on telling you we not only believe something, but we want you to believe it too, because we know an event is going to take place, and when it does, we're going to get the good stuff, and you're going to be left behind if you don't plug into this. You know, no wonder people don't want to hear this. Although I have to say this, I have to contradict myself now, because the fact is that the evangelical churches are not suffering as much as the mainline faiths. And my suspicion is that they're pulling from the mainline faith. So they're getting Catholics and they're getting, quote-unquote liberal Protestants into the evangelical churches because they're providing something that's a little deeper, that's a little edgier, that that gives people a little bit more to talk about and hold on to. So I don't believe that there are fewer Christians in the United States. I just think that we're far enough away from a singular event that scared the hell out of people, that drove them into churches. And I think, you know, if we have another event like 9/11, you're going to see the numbers for faiths improving. And the other thing is the millennial generation, like every generation in the history of the United States, is going to change the way these churches operate. It's inevitable. And when the churches finally figure out that they've got to adjust to this new generation and change their approach, then, you know, we'll see what happens. But you'll see that on all of the morning shows. The morning TV news shows will have that story, if not this morning, in real podcast time, if you're listening to this on, what is this, May 13th? Yeah, it's May 13th. So it's Tuesday, May 13th. Don't forget the big meteor is going to hit on Wednesday, May 14th. But this will be a story that will be featured prominently on Friday morning, probably, because that's, you know, it's before the weekend and everybody can think about that before and they'll talk about it in their churches if they go to church. So I it's interesting. It's just an interesting story to me because it's, and I don't mean to seem disingenuous because actually I have a lot of respect for people who, go to church and follow their faith and so forth. I just, it's not for me. I believe in God. I'm certainly not an atheist, but when it comes to church, I'm like a fish out of water in there. I just don't like going to church. I don't know why. I just don't. So sorry, but that's the way it is. And then I got to mention another story that I love because it just, it reinforces what I talk a lot about in the podcasts when it comes to work. There were several stories and you're going to start to see more and more coverage of robotics as a fear. You know, if we're talking about fears and faith, it's very interesting because you're starting to see a lot of coverage of autonomous machines and robotics and things like that. And you're starting to see the rise of movies which depict the dark side or the dystopian view of artificial intelligence. And very little of the utopian view of artificial intelligence, which we're many, 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 many years away from machines that will even approximate what the human mind does. I mean, we will probably have anti-aging drugs that are very effective long before we have artificial intelligence. But one of the things we will have is robotics and autonomous machines. And we have it now and we will have it more. And the reason that everyone everyone is keying into the artificial intelligence fear is because what they're really afraid of is machine production and machine services, which is what we're going to have in the very near future. We're talking about a future which some people call the threat of a jobless future. And this has been a fear in industrialized countries for a long time, because, of course, we've had IT in industrialized countries for a long time, going back to the 1960s when computers first came on the scene. If you've been watching the last season of Mad Men, then you know that this computer thing was a theme in Mad Men. And I think it's interesting that they chose that as a theme, because not only does it reflect the fears of the 1960s about computers, it also reflects the fears of a jobless future due to robotics and and artificial intelligence in the present time frame. But I love these articles because I've been talking about this for a long time. First of all, it isn't a jobless future, but it does not bode well for people who have part-time service jobs. It does not bode well for people who have the kinds of jobs that can be eliminated with autonomous machines. And the particular article that I'm talking about is in Salon. And of course, Salon is trying to tell us that we have to do something about this. We have to stop this. You can't stop this, first of all. And it goes through. It talks about automation in fast food, and it's so interesting to me that it's blindsided and ignores the fact that the left consistently demands higher pay and more benefits for workers that are unskilled that end up working at a place like McDonald's. And as they do that, these companies are then going to be driven into automation. Apparently, it's true. I mean, it doesn't even really bear any kind of criticism that labor is a huge piece of the fast food business. And if you can automate, then, and I'm talking about the actual hamburger making process. There's a San Francisco startup company called Momentum Machines, which has, they have in their mind to fully automate the production of gourmet quality hamburgers. They want to put these machines. They're about half the size of the current McDonald's kitchen. They think they can get it to be even smaller. It does everything. It flips the burgers. It makes the burgers. It grinds the meat. It adds the extras and wraps it up. And actually, you could use a machine to deliver the hamburger, or you can have one or two employees that make sure the machines operate. And it's going to change the nature of work. And then the story, it's a great story because it goes through and talks about how they're using machines in the retail sector. It talks about how they're using it with vending machines. It talks about restocking and maintenance and repair at big retail chains like Walmart. And it's fascinating information, and it's coming very quickly. And I always know when these things are happening because we're now being treated to a number of stories about how driverless cars are crashing in California where they're being tested. And I had to laugh because when I saw that story, I said, I'm sure if you went back to the newspapers around 1904 and 05, there were probably lots and lots of stories about cars crashing and airplanes crashing and people saying things like, this new technology will never catch on because it's too dangerous. And then 10, 15 years later, it had caught on in a big way. Here's what's coming. And when we talk about the economy and we talk about what's wrong with the economy and we talk about the part-time economy and we talk about, a dearth of jobs and all these things that are part of what is going on, it's not the reason that we have problems in our economy, but it's one of the big issues that comes up when we talk about economy over and over and over again. This is only going to increase because unskilled jobs, even skilled jobs, are going to be replaced with machines wherever possible because machines don't ask for a raise, machines don't call in sick, machines don't complain, and machines deliver a consistent performance over and over and over again. And for things that require that, it's great. For things that are high touch, for things that require the human touch, for things that machines cannot do, then there's probably an opportunity for people. And I don't believe that I think these machines are going to create more jobs than anybody realizes. This is just creative destruction going on here. And we're in the midst of this. There's going to be generation, perhaps, of people who are disrupted by this. But in the long term, this is the future. And we can look forward to a future where you know, most of the industrial processes in our world will be completely automated. So human beings won't have to work in plants anymore because machines will. And I think it's going to create a lot of jobs, and I think it's going to create a great future as long as we can ensure that economies grow. And so that's, you know, that's the big issue, because if nobody works, then how do we make the economy grow? Well, people will find something to do, and there will be inventions and there will be innovations for people to find work and to do work. But I got news for you. If you don't have a skill or a hope or a future, and if you can't apply the law of dynamic reversal in your life, if you are stuck in, you know, because of your own fault in these kinds of, you know, low skilled situations, you know, you're in trouble. On the same line, if you're, you know, kind of an unimaginative attorney, a machine can do your job. So it isn't, this is hitting white collar employees as well as, you know, labored, you know, not people who labor in plants, although there are those, but this whole thing going on with free trade, you know, it's all about, you know, people think it's what they're going to send jobs overseas and things of that nature. A lot of these jobs that we have come to know in the last 100 years, which we associate with labor, which, you know, is blue collar, people who work in plants, even the people who work in plants are essentially IT workers. And you can make steel, the same amount of steel, better steel, that used to take 5,000 employees on 3 shifts at U.S. Steel in Pittsburgh, takes 12 guys, and it's made with machines. And the 12 guys are very experienced with IT and with computers and with steel making, and they get paid a lot more money than minimum wage. So there's a good future. We just have to figure our way through it, and we can't stop it. You can't stop disruption. And I guess, you know, if there's anything, and I don't see political candidates talking about this, I don't think our systems and our institutions really fully grasp the degree to which this disruption is occurring. Right now, it's probably subconscious to a large degree, but it's going to become overt in the next 10, 15 years, and we've got to be prepared for it because it's really going to be something. Podcast 368, sponsored by Ryan Plumbing and Heating of St. Paul. I was just hanging out with Greg tonight, and he wanted me to remind everybody that, you know, it's going to get warm. Now, it has to be at least 70 for Ryan to check the AC to make sure it works, but it's going to get warm. It's going to actually get hot, and I have predicted a hot summer, so I'm usually right. You know, at least 50% of the time I'm right. So don't forget Ryan Plumbing and Heating to check your air conditioning. And for emergency service, 651-224-4771 in St. Paul. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Metro-wide from St. Paul for over 60 years, Ryan Plumbing and Heating. I got to thank the digital sponsors of the Bob Davis Podcast, Mad Case Studios, creating quality original automotive artwork. The stuff they do is great, and it's original artwork. It's not just a picture of your car. And don't forget that Mad K is going to be out at some of the antique auto shows this summer. I'll tell you more and more as we get closer to the events. And of course, maybe the Mobile Podcast Command Studio will be there as well. If you click on the Mad K banner, it takes you to their Facebook page, and you can interact with Ken, and he can tell you all the stuff that they do. You can click on this banner and all the other banners of the Bob Davis Podcast sponsors for more information about what they do, as well as the digital sponsors of the Bob Davis Podcast.com. And thanks to you guys for listening on Stitcher.com, iTunes, or TuneIn, different services that provide podcasts. And of course, the latest is Blog Talk Radio. We have a player right up there on the page that actually, when you click on it, it'll play the last podcast that I uploaded to Blog Talk Radio, usually the last podcast that has been uploaded to the page, if that's easier. People say, why do you have all these? This is just different devices. You know, Stitcher works really well with Android devices. Blog Talk works well with all three of them. iTunes, of course, is the standard. My friend Greg just got an iPhone 6 tonight, and I was showing him how to subscribe using the podcast app on iTunes. And then there's TuneIn, and we will be posting a TuneIn player as well in the very near future. And thanks, you guys, for liking, sharing, and favoriting, and following on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. And most importantly, thank you for your donations at thebobdavispodcast.com. You can donate safely and securely through PayPal right there on the page. Look for the big yellow donate button at thebobdavispodcast.com. And thank you for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast, Podcast 368.